morning is 2020-797, State of Ohio versus Jeremy Crawford. For the appellant, Mr. Gamzo.
Good morning, Your Honor, Chief Justice, Honorable Court, may it please the court. Jeffrey Gamzo on behalf of Jeremy Crawford, and I would like to reserve 5 minutes, please, for rebuttal. Mr. Crawford was charged in a four-count indictment. Count one was murder. Count two, improper discharge of a firearm. Count four, having a weapon under a disability. And count three, which is the one that we're here today, strictly speaking about, involuntary manslaughter, with the predicate offense for the involuntary manslaughter being count four, the weapon under disability. He was found not guilty of murder, guilty of the other three offenses. And there's no question at this point that he was guilty, in fact, of having a weapon under a disability. He admitted on the witness stand, he testified that he retrieved a gun and shot twice in the air, which is in the street. That's improper discharge. He had the gun. He stipulated to the attempted drug deal, which was the basis for the weapon under a disability charge. He's guilty of those two offenses.
Counsel, let me ask you this question. Is there any concession or mutual understanding between you and the state as to whose bullets caused the death of the victim in this case?
There's no question. There's no clear answer. Mr. Crawford maintains that he was not the shooter, that the unidentified African-American person who was with him when he arrived at the scene was in fact the shooter of the victim. And
the Court of Appeals decision says that the police identified this person by name as part of their investigation. In the facts of the, whatever happened to this defendant, was he prosecuted?
I can't answer that question, Your Honor. I do not know. Okay. Possibly Mr. Ochocki knows. But regardless of the question in either case is whether a weapon under disability charge can serve as, or does serve, more precisely, does serve in this case as the basis for involuntary manslaughter as the predicate offense. It's not a question of whether he had a gun. He had a gun. There was a gun there. That's settled. But possession, having the gun, that's a but-for thing. That's not necessarily a proximate cause of the killing. And more to the point, having a gun because he was not allowed to due to an attempted drug offense is not the proximate cause, or more precisely, the death is not the proximate result, which is what the statute specifically says, not the proximate result of having a gun that he could not have because of that drug offense. The state.
Now, sir, what does the reason for this ability have to do with anything? Doesn't the statute require that the result, that the crime result from the disability, not the reason for the disability?
I would argue, Your Honor, that what the statute says and what he's charged with is having a weapon under a disability because. The because is a part of the statute, and it's part of the predicate offense of the statute.
But the only crime he committed was, it has to be the proximate result of another crime. The only crime he committed was having a weapons under disability. So it doesn't, the reason isn't part of the crime of having weapons under disability.
I Well, Your Honor,
he violated was having a weapon under disability, right?
What he violated was having a weapon under a disability, but that's not simply having a weapon. It's not simple.
Is the question whether violating the prohibition against having a weapon under disability caused the manslaughter offense?
Well, first of all, the answer to that we would say is no. That having the weapon under a disability is essentially a status offense, and the fact of the status offense in itself does not cause the crime. Having the weapon may be a but for.
Well, it's not the crime. It's just having having a weapon under a disability offense includes using a weapon, right?
Yes. Yes, but having the weapon under a disability is, regardless of what you do with it, is a status offense, and the status itself is not in the ordinary case, in anything like the ordinary case, and we would submit this falls in that category, is not the proximate cause of the death. It's a but-for cause, yes. He shouldn't have had the gun. He shouldn't have used the gun to shoot in the air, which at the very least is what he did. And we would submit that's all he did, but the record is unclear. The Court of Appeals says we don't know.
Isn't the issue whether a reasonable jury could have found that the manslaughter charge arose from using a weapon? He was precluded from using a weapon, right? And whether the question is whether a reasonable jury could have found that caused the second offense.
A juror could have found that using a weapon caused death. Yes, of course. What we would submit is that using the weapon, that the charge, however, is not whether using the weapon, you and I may just keep going back and forth on this, Justice DeWine, but that using a weapon, it is the using the weapon under the disability, and that. We submit is part, the disability itself is part of the predicate offense. And you can't just remove that and say, well, the offense is using the weapon. No, the offense is having the weapon, using it or brandishing the various ways that one can improperly have the weapon. But it is the impropriety of his having the weapon, the disability that is key to having a weapon under a disability, which is the predicate offense. It's not having a weapon. It's having a weapon under a disability. And you can't write the second half of that out without deleting part of the statute, which this court isn't supposed to do. That's a legislative act to change the statute. And that's the essence of the argument, that the offense is not merely having a weapon. The predicate offense is not merely having a weapon. It's having that weapon under a disability. And without some connection between the disability and the death, the predicate offense in this case, in the ordinary case, when having a weapon under a disability is the predicate offense for involuntary manslaughter, it's not going to, we would say it's improper. It doesn't satisfy, it is essentially a status offense, and the status, it may be a but-for cause of the death, but but-for is not a predicate, is not proximate cause.
Let me ask it a little differently. The way I understand the weapons under disability statute, the person knowingly acquires, has, carry, or uses any firearm or dangerous ordnance. In this case, he not just carried it, he used it, right?
Well, he certainly used it shooting up in the air.
Right.
And whether he used it to shoot that's.
So, but my point is, I was trying to understand your status argument, because it wasn't just status that he had the gun there. It's he used it.
But it goes back. Yes. Fine. But it still goes back to the question of. The status is the impropriety of him doing it, of him not having a right to have the gun and use it. He's not charged with involuntary manslaughter for an improper discharge of a firearm.
Mr. Gibbs, so he could have just brandished the gun and the result could have still been the same, that the other person became incited and shot their gun, correct?
Well, that perhaps. I mean, yes.
Well, do we know that
could be what happened.
Is that what's in the facts? Is there an indication that the shooter was incited by whatever the client did?
It's one of the things that the Court of Appeals that the 8th District Court of Appeals.
The 8th District said could have been, but I mean, you know, the fact that it was a full moon could have been. Are there any facts that indicates that the shooter, the actual person who shot the victim, was incited by anything Mr. Crawford did?
As one of the Court of Appeals, when it said, we don't really know what happened, whether he shot him or not. If he shot him, then that's one thing. If he didn't, well, maybe he incited it, and that could serve. Yeah, his action. I'm not disputing that what he did may have been a proximate cause. The death may have proximately resulted from some action that Mr. Crawford took. What I am arguing is that the specific action, that the predicate offense itself includes not just having the gun, but the disability. And the disability itself, whether it was from shooting the gun in the air and inspiring somebody else to shoot, or shooting directly, the disability is part of the predicate offense of having a weapon under a disability. And the disability has to have, in order for it to serve as the predicate offense, in order for it to be for the death to be a proximate result of having a weapon under a disability, there needs to be a connection of some sort between the disability and the death.
Counsel, if we agree with you, what happens?
He's guilty of having a weapon under a disability, for which he was sentenced to, I believe, 3 years in prison. He's guilty of having improper discharge of a firearm, which he was sentenced to 180 days. There's a firearm specification attached to the improper discharge. So he's still going to serve some time in prison, but he's not going to be guilty of involuntary manslaughter.
Counsel, was your client tried on a complicity theory by the state? Was there a complicity?
It was a mixed possibility. He was in closing arguments. The state certainly argued, even if you don't think he killed him, he's guilty of complicity.
And what's the evidence? Well, I'll ask the state that.
It's once again, the evidence is that if he wasn't the shooter, that he was involved in and started the arguments and kept them going and shot up in the air. And as the Court of Appeals said, as I guess it was Justice Bruner suggested, you know, that may have been incited his the other person to shoot the victim. But it keeps coming back to this. I keep coming back to the same point, which is that his status as, and the disability is not a proximate cause. And I've got about no time left.
That's true. So we'll move on now to Mr. Oshaki.
Thank you. Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court, Cuyahoga County Assistant Prosecuting Attorney Greg Oshaki, on behalf of the appellee, the state of Ohio, I'll be sharing the last 5 minutes of my argument time with the Ohio Attorney General's office. The issue that this court accepted for review is whether, in the ordinary course of things, having weapons while under disability can serve as the predicate offense for an involuntary manslaughter conviction. And the answer, based on the plain language of the involuntary manslaughter statute, is yes. The statute provides that no person will cause the death of another as the proximate result of committing a felony. In this case, Crawford does not dispute that he violated the having weapons under disability statute, which is a third degree felony, when he reached into his car, pulled out a gun, and knowingly used it and fired it into the air. Under those facts and circumstances.
So Mr. Oshaki, how is that then causing the death?
Well, under the facts and circumstances of the case, which the fact finder reviewed, we had a early morning hours dispute that started in a house. It was an argument with the appellant and a third person. The victim stepped in to protect the third person. The argument got heated enough that the homeowner told the victim, actually everybody, to take it outside.
But how did Mr. Crawford's violating having the weapon under disability, whether it was in his pocket, whether he shot it in the air, whether he hit somebody over the head, some third person over the head with the butt of the gun, how did that cause the victim's death?
That caused the death because it was the issue is when you're in the middle of an argument and you pull out a gun, it's reasonable to the likely result is that anyone else that has a gun is going to pull their gun out and shoot it.
Maybe not. Isn't that like so tenuous as to be, it's like, wet toilet. I mean, how is that to say there's so many other things that could come into play? If the shooter could have actually intended to kill the victim. So then how is Crawford's disability even a part of the scenario?
Well, Your Honor, the ultimate finder of fact, the finder of fact here determined that it was that the shooting of the gun in the air did proximately result in the defendant's death. And that's not the issue that's before this court.
Counsel, can I ask you something about that? The state in its case in chief did present some evidence that Crawford directly shot the victim in this case through Angela Mann. She testified that he made an admission 2 days after the shooting that he shot, and then he later recanted it and said he just shot in the air. That's right.
Okay. That's correct, Your Honor.
So that, do you agree with me that that's the only testimony that gets the state by a 29 motion as to causation?
As to causation for aggravated murder? Yes.
The jury found the defendant not guilty of murder. And how is it consistent then to find him guilty as having caused under the involuntary manslaughter charge?
Well, Your Honor, Involuntary manslaughter is a lesser included offense of aggravated murder. And the jury presumably determined that Mr. Crawford did not intend to kill the victim, but that Mr. Crawford's actions caused, you know, were approximate result of the victim's death.
By causing another person to shoot the victim?
Correct. His friend is the person that he brought to the party is the one that shot the victim. And like I said, there was a situation here where you've got a group of people in close proximity to each other. There's threats going back and forth. And, you know, instead of getting in his car and driving away, he reaches in his car and pulls out a gun. And by brandishing that gun, he set a chain of events where it was with, you know, when you pull a gun out in the middle of an argument, I think that's within the scope of the risk that someone's going to die. That's within the scope of the risk that you create.
So, Mr. Ozaki, if everything had happened exactly the way this played out, and Mr. Crawford had a gun in his back pocket, are the results the same?
If he does not brandish his gun,
correct. But he still has one, so he's in violation of the weapons under disability.
Well, then I think you have to look at. Under the fact finder has to look at under the facts and circumstances, is that a situation that having a gun on your person creates the risk that someone's going to be shot? My opinion, I think it's an easier call when you pull your gun out and you fire it in the air.
I'm a little surprised at your argument this morning. It isn't. Couldn't the jury have found that the defendants killed the victim? I mean, he didn't intend to, but he shot in the air. And isn't that a reasonable interpretation of the jury's verdict here?
It would be a reasonable interpretation, Your Honor. The fact is, we don't know who shot. I mean, we don't know who shot the victim.
Right, and so. If we're reviewing for sufficiency of the evidence, then the question would be, could a reasonable jury have found that by him violating the statute, using a firearm, that he caused was the proximate cause of the victim's death, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
Counsel, is there any forensics with regards to, the gun and, you know, the whatever bullets they took out of the victim?
There was the forensics showed, Your Honor, that there were shell casings. I think there were six shell casings that were found on the scene. Four that they determined came from gun A, two that came from gun B. The forensic examiners were unable to determine which gun caused or which bullets actually hit the victim, so that they were not able to tell which of the two guns was actually the gun that was shot and that killed the victim.
So how many bullets were in the victim?
There were two bullets that were in the victim, Your Honor.
And they came from the same gun?
I don't think they can determine which gun the bullets came from.
Were the bullets so degraded? Is that what you're saying?
The forensic examiner could not determine. They were both both 9mm.
Okay, all right. Moving on then. So what Justice DeWine just outlined, the jury could have found that one of the, when the, there is an admission that he fired his weapon. So that's a given for everybody's purposes. Whether he fired it in the air, or whether he fired at the defendant, you know, the jury could have believed that he fired it at the defendant.
The victim.
That's correct.
The victim. I'm sorry, the victim. Yes.
But following up on Chief Justice's question, that doesn't make any sense with a not guilty verdict on the felony murder charge, count one. If they made that factual finding that the defendant directly shot the victim, and you did present evidence of that, it just doesn't make sense then that they wouldn't find the defendant guilty of felony murder. It wasn't aggravated murder, it was felony murder, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Jury verdicts don't have to be consistent, right? That's the rule when we review for sufficiency.
That's correct, Your Honor. When you have multiple counts in an indictment, the individual counts themselves, each count has to be consistent, but they don't have to be consistent with each other.
Well, let me just get back to the weapons under disability. Sorry, I have a lawnmower nearby. If Mr. Crawford had fired the gun in the air, but was not under disability, could you think the reasonable fact finder still find that his firing the gun in the air resulted in the death of the victim?
I believe it could have, Your Honor, under the firing a weapon in the over prohibited premises. Because he was standing in the middle of the street and he fired it. If they had thought that firing had caused approximately resulted in the defendant's death, yes, they could have.
But he wasn't charged with that.
He was charged with that, Your Honor. He was convicted of the misdemeanor offense.
Okay.
Right. So because that was a misdemeanor, could there still be a finding that firing in the air resulted in the what? So you're saying a fact finder could still find that shooting in the air resulted in the victim's death?
Yes, Your Honor.
Even though the charge of firing near habitation was not a felony?
Correct, Your Honor. And under Section B of the statute, a misdemeanor can be, or if the jury had found that his firing, you know, caused serious injury. If he had fired in the air and if they believed that the bullet had hit him, then maybe they could have.
No, you're right. Right. Without assuming that the bullets fired from Mr. Crawford's guns were the bullets that went in the air and didn't hit anybody.
Under your fact pattern, Your Honor?
Yes, under the fact pattern of not being under disability, firing gun in the air, but those bullets not being responsible for the death of the victim.
I think they could have still approximately resulted in the victim's death. Yes, Your Honor.
But Mr. Ochocki, in order for there to be involuntary manslaughter, there needed to be the conviction of a felony. And so since the other was a misdemeanor, the only thing that was left to the trial court was the weapon under disability, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. And the way we charged it, it was charged as the having weapons under disability was the predicate offense.
Right. You're well into the state's time.
I was going to say, if there's no further questions, I would just ask that the court affirm the decision of the 8th District. Thank you.
Mr. Blakely.
Good morning, Chief Justice O'Connor. May it please the court. I represent the Attorney General, and I'm here to clarify a few things. And I first want to draw the court's attention to the only issue that is before it. The question is not whether there's proximate cause, and that's so for two reasons. First, Crawford does not present that argument before this court. And second, my friend Mr. Gamzo just conceded that there is proximate cause. The only question before this court is whether a violation of the felon in possession statute can serve as the predicate offense for involuntary manslaughter. The answer is yes. It makes no difference whether the underlying offense is robbery, child abuse, or any other felony in the revised code. The only question is, did the defendant commit a felony? If the answer is yes, then so long as that felony is the proximate cause of a death, they are guilty of involuntary manslaughter. That's the end of this case.
Well, but the question is the proximate cause issue. Where do we get that connection? You're saying that without question, he committed a felony, having a weapon, being under a disability and having, using, brandishing, whatever, a weapon, and as long as it proximately caused. Where is that connection?
I'll answer your question in a moment, but first I do want to clarify, that's not the question before this court. As Mr. Gamzo just said, there is proximate cause. Now, to the extent the court is interested in that factual...
I don't remember him saying that, but okay, go ahead.
To the extent the court is interested in that factual proximate cause question, the standard of review dictates the answer. Viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to the prosecution, could a reasonable fact finder conclude that Crawford, by starting a fight, escalating the fight, acquiring a gun, brandishing his gun, and firing it twice into the air, started a chain of events that resulted in the death of another? The answer is yes. And the reason why it's...
Mr. Blakely, there's foreseeability with proximate cause. And the actual activity that constitutes the felony is having a weapon while under a disability. The fact that he had it in his possession. So analyze that in the context of foreseeability, that it would cause someone else's death just by the fact that his status was that he possessed a gun.
Sure. So it seems like you are regurgitating Mr. Gamzo's argument, and I want to break it down.
I don't regurgitate anything.
I apologize, Your Honor. I want to break down that argument because it's a bit confusing. Let's start with the felon in possession statute. There are two elements. One, an individual must have previously been convicted of a felony. That's the disability component. And two, they must have, possess, or use a firearm. That's the second component.
My question is about foreseeability.
Exactly. And your question directly asks, how can one element of the underlying offense reasonably foresee that it will cause the death of another? But that's not what the involuntary manslaughter statute says. The involuntary manslaughter statute says that the commission of the felony must proximately cause the death of another. It's not differentiating.
The statute says no person shall cause the death of another as a proximate result of the offender's committing or attempting to commit a felony. And when you get into the case law from the 8th and the 10th districts, proximate results in this conduct or context are defined as results which would not have occurred but for the risky activity and which are within the risk of foreseeable results of such activity.
Okay, so the question then is it reasonably foreseeable that by having a gun and brandishing it in the middle of a street fight and firing it twice into the air, that it's possible that someone else might also have a gun and they might fire in return, or they might join the fight to help their friend and fire at the opposing party. That is reasonably foreseeable. It seems as though the court's getting hung up on the possibility of there being an intervening cause, but the mere existence of an intervening cause does not automatically sever the causal chain. And that's especially true when that intervening cause was set in motion by the defendant's own conduct. Plus, again, your Honor is right. Reasonable foreseeability is the heart of proximate cause, but it doesn't need to be the most immediate next step. I want the court's point this court's attention to State versus Hall, it's 2017 Ohio 879. There, a mother left her child at home, and she was the proximate cause of her child dying in a fire due to her absence in the home. That seems pretty like a long stretch, but the court held that was the proximate legal cause. And so that's the same thing here. And plus, this does seem like a close factual scenario. And that's the reason why it's an easy case on appeal. The jury found that in these close facts, Crawford was the proximate cause. On appeal, given the standard of review, viewing light most evidence favorable to the prosecution, this should be an easy case on appeal. And I do just want to reemphasize again, that's not the question before this court.
It's illegal. Based on analysis two, you would then agree that if we were to find in favor of the state on this case and affirm the Court of Appeals, then the exact same fact scenario minus the shots fired in the air, Mr. Crawford bringing a gun, still violating the statute, disability statute, he could still be found guilty of the victim's death. Involuntary manslaughter.
Potentially, I do think it would matter what the jury found in terms of how the mere possession of the gun played into the fight. For example, if they were just fighting on the street and it was a concealed gun that nobody saw whatsoever, I don't think that a reasonable fact finder could conclude that a hidden gun somehow, it would be reasonably foreseeable that someone else would fire the gun in response to a hidden gun. I don't think a reasonable fact finder could find that.
But I see your point there. Thanks for making the distinction. So, and if Mr. Crawford fired the exact same scenario now, but wasn't under disability, you say the facts still support a finding of his being responsible for the death. But you don't have the underlying felony of having weapons under disability.
Sure, and that's because the involuntary manslaughter statute has two elements. First, do you have the disability? Second, were you the proximate cause? If you only have proximate cause but no disability, then the state would need to charge something else. But here, the jury found both elements. He was under disability, and they found, based on the evidence, the surrounding circumstances, it was reasonably foreseeable that by his conduct, he set off a chain of events that eventually resulted in the death of another. And again, just given the standard of review, that's why this court should affirm.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Gamzo, you have used your time. We'll give you a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. Very quickly, first of all, I did not concede guilt.
Mr. Gamzo, I thought the representation was that you conceded proximate cause.
I concede proximate cause I concede the possibility that a jury could have found proximate cause from the use of the gun.
But which is what we have here. That's what we have here, is the use of the gun.
That's not the question. The question is proximate cause from the improper possession and use of the gun. The improper part is the key. He's not charged, as he could have been, with improper discharge as a predicate to a lesser involuntary manslaughter, involuntary manslaughter B. That would be a different question. The question here isn't the improper discharge. It's not the shooting of the gun, which he did at some point, one way or another, in the air to Mr. A, one way or another. The question is whether the weapon under a disability felony was the proximate cause, provided the proximate result, reasonable foreseeability, all those pieces. The disability is part of the predicate offense. And that's what the state and my friend, the Attorney General, both want to say that's irrelevant. The essence, the underlying offense that proximately caused the death, the indictment charges, the jury said, the Court of Appeals affirmed, was not that he had a gun, not that he used a gun, but that he was under a disability. And
I don't understand how you can divorce his status as a felon of being under a disability, okay, a weapons under a disability status, with the use of the gun, and you'd like to, you know, separate that. I don't understand how you can do that.
Because he isn't charged with using a gun to cause the death. He's charged with being a person who has no right to have the gun.
But a weapons under disability status is possessing or using. And here he met that definition.
He used the gun, but the fact that he had the status that said he couldn't use the gun, that's what the charge is that proximately resulted in the death. And that status that says you can't use the gun, you can't have it, you can't use it, that doesn't cause the death. It's the use, if in fact is the cause of the death.
Thank you. Gentlemen, we'll take the matter under advisement and you'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you please adjourn court?
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.